Well, cryptocurrency, artificial intelligence and the psychological impact of the pandemic are among the themes at this year's BT Young Scientist exhibition. The three-day event, which will be held entirely online again this year, gets underway tomorrow. And to discuss this, Mary Cahalan, the head of the BT Young Scientist and Technology exhibition, joins me. Mary, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
So the excitement beginning to build. I'm sure after it finished up last year in 2021, attention immediately turned to this year's exhibition in 22. So how excited are you to get it up and running now tomorrow?
It's always good to get to this time of year and this juncture of year. Judging will start tomorrow, so we just wanted to make sure everything is up and running for that. That's the most important part of the exhibition, that the students get a chance to talk about their projects and to let the judges know what they've done, what they've researched. Over the last number of months.
How have you found it over the last couple of years in terms of it being online? Because, you know, it's always such a fantastic fun fair. I've been up there on numerous occasions when it's held in person. So things had to, I suppose, change over the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one thing. I was delighted, as BT is a technology company, that we were able to help enable the virtual exhibition running. I don't think many others probably could have done it. It was a lot of stress to get it there. But the most important thing was we made the decision that we wouldn't cancel. We wouldn't postpone. We'd go ahead. So that's the decision we made for 2021. Then we looked earlier in the year about working, when we let the schools know how it was going ahead. And we made that decision back in May because we wanted the schools to know before they broke up for the summer that, look, it was going ahead and it was going online again. I'm so glad we made that decision back then, because I don't think we could have had a face-to-face exhibition at this time of year. Now with everything else that's going on.
And it still hasn't taken away from how popular it is, because there's almost or just over 1,000 students making their final preparations today, and they'll be bringing forward their exhibitions over the next 3 days.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a lot more that put an entry forward. So the judges have gone with the top well over 500 projects, and they're the students that will be presenting to the judges on Wednesday and Thursday, and then of course we've got the big announcements and unveiling of the winners on Friday lunchtime.
I mentioned in the outset just some of the topics that are being covered in terms of the projects, but what else can you tell us? I know the pandemic is featuring quite heavily as an inspiration for some of the projects.
Yeah, so the change, of course we had COVID being talked about last year, but it was more around hand sanitizers, about face masks, all that sort of thing. What's changed this year is the students are talking about how their learning has been disrupted or enhanced with online, but also how it has been a psychological drain on people and everything else. So that they're looking at things in a different way again. Of course, they're looking at climate. They always, always do. I've noticed in the last number of years, the students are looking about how they can change the future. They're not depending on me and our generations to do that for them. So I think they're becoming more accountable for their own futures and doing that as well.
Just remind us, Mary, as well, what age these students are and also what the prizes are on offer for those who are lucky enough and talented enough, more talented than I would be in terms of scientific knowledge, but if their project gets to one of the top prizes.
So the overall prize is €7,500. Which cannot be sneezed. So that's for our overall winner or winners to share between them. I think we've got somewhere around 40,000 in prizes altogether. We'll be making well over 100 awards, or announcing the winners of those awards on Friday. And then we've supplementary awards that we will let the schools know about almost straight away as well. So there's real excitement and there's always a buzz when we go, like, who's going to win? What sort of project's going to win this year? The students are from 12 to 19 years of age. So from first year right the way through to sixth year. And we've got three age groups in that. So we've got the juniors, our first and second years, our intermediates, our third years and transition years, and then our seniors are fifth and sixth. And we've four categories that they can enter. So there's lots of opportunity for them to get involved.
And it's really about bringing the fun to the exhibition as well, and, you know, kind of highlighting that science isn't all about going in and learning in the classroom, that it's quite hands-on. And this is where that idea comes from.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the idea 58 plus years ago, and that hasn't changed. So the sort of the kernel of the idea, we've sort of helped grow over the years with that. So it's all about science discovery. It's all about getting involved in investigating something that you've got a passion for in the science, technology, engineering and maths fields.
And just finally then, before we let you go, Mary, is there a way or an opportunity that we at home can have a look at some of the exhibitions or log on, or do we just wait and see what happens with the grand offering of who wins at the end?
Oh, no. We have built an online portal. So that has like hundreds of hours of content on it. So all our science shows, interviews with alumni, lots of stuff on there. All of the students have done a video that sits on that portal, so they're able to tell the general public about their project. So best thing for people to do is go on to www.btyoungscientist.com. All the details of how they register for the portal are there, and that goes live at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Great stuff. Well, the very best of luck over the next 3 days. No doubt it's going to be fantastic as ever. Mary Cahalan, the head of the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition. Thanks, Mary.
Now, we did hear there during our 2 o'clock headlines that the Taoiseach has said he does support reducing the period some close contacts are required to isolate. Updated advice is expected from the Chief Medical Officer today for Cabinet to consider tomorrow, as Cabinet are meeting tomorrow. The guidance may include a reduced isolation period for asymptomatic close contacts while there is extreme pressure on the healthcare system and other parts of society. And other parts of society include those retail workers. We know the Christmas period in particular, and obviously the sales post-Christmas, probably not as popular as they once were, even due to online shopping, etc. But due to the lockdown over the on and off over the past 22 months, people did tend to get out and about more to the sales, etc. after Christmas. And those retail workers are taking a huge hit in recent days and recent weeks in terms of the high volume of COVID-19 infections of the Omicron variant. Keith Pollard is the divisional organiser with Mandate Trade Union. He joins me now. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Kerry. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you, Keith. It is a sector of society that, aside from kind of the first lockdown, did stay open and did stay working throughout the pandemic, and unfortunately is often overlooked.
Yes, I'd agree totally with you, Kerry. And firstly, thanks very much for the opportunity to come on and to speak about this extremely important situation. It is one of the areas that is overlooked when we talk about essential workers. It was our members who were keeping the economy going and keeping, you know, people fed and watered, shall we say, during the whole of this pandemic. And you're right, there has been increased numbers of COVID cases within the retail sector across our membership. There's been a very high increase in close contacts across the sector also.
And just in regards to close contact, Keith, as of right now, we'll just go through this for listeners. If you have received a COVID-19 booster vaccine and you are in contact with somebody who is a positive case, you need to isolate for 5 days. You need to take 3 antigen tests. I think 3 antigen tests. And then obviously if they're all negative, then you can come out of isolation. If it's a positive, obviously, then you need to go further with PCR testing. And then if you are somebody who has not received a COVID-19 booster vaccine, which is a large part of those aged under 50, it means that they have to isolate for 10 days if they are a close contact of a positive case. So it did mean just after Christmas in particular, Keith, there were a huge number of employees missing from grocery stores, from clothing stores, because they had been exposed to the virus over the period, and whether they had decided or not to get the vaccine, didn't have a booster vaccine.
And I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Kira. Right, you said, I think you have to correct yourself about how long people have to isolate and how long they don't have to isolate for, and what is a close contact and what's not a close contact. It's extremely complicated at this present moment of time. There's very unclear messages coming from the HSE. Like the vast majority of people now who are close contacts don't have to get a PCR test. But if you're a close contact of somebody who tests positive on an antigen test, what have you to do? Have you to self-isolate?
Mm-hmm.
Have you to, because there is a lot of employers who are saying that a close contact of a positive antigen test isn't classed as a close contact, mm-hmm. according to the HSE, and therefore they don't have to self-isolate. They're not entitled to apply for the enhanced illness benefit. because they haven't been deemed as a close contact by the HSE. So it is very unclear at this present moment in time, which is actually leading, it's leading to possibly increased levels of contamination.
So just in regards to that, I just headed onto the HSE's website. So we have up-to-date information for our listeners and obviously for ourselves while we're chatting about this, Keith. So it says here on HSE's website what a close contact means. It says when you've been in close contact with somebody who tested positive for COVID-19, you'll get a text from the HSE. You could have been in contact with a positive case in your household, outside your household, and it goes down to list what to do if a certain situation. And I think that's the confusing thing as of right now, Keith. So the only way
that you can, as far as I'm aware, and sorry, I need to emphasize this, I'm no doctor and I'm not a public health spokesperson either. But, you know, and I am speaking from personal experience here, because unfortunately COVID did come into my own household here, and trying to navigate the different types of advice is actually quite difficult. But you only get a confirmed positive case from the HSE, close contact, if you've tested positive on the PCR. You don't get one if you test positive if you're a close contact of somebody who tests positive on an antigen.
So, Keith, what are members at Mandate calling for in particular? Obviously, clearer messaging and clearer guidance. You're mentioning the antigen test there in particular. But their own kind of stories over the past, would say, 2-3 weeks when the infection rate has been so high.
Well, definitely what we will be saying is that we need employers to step up to the mark again, right, with regards to social distancing in the stores, with regard to limiting numbers of customers who are allowed access to those stores at any given time, with the provision of hand sanitizer. I don't know about yourself, Ciara, but I've certainly noticed it, that, you know, the provision of hand sanitizer going into shops is, you know, it's starting to disappear, right? And you have to go looking for it. And in most cases, when you do actually find it, it could be empty. But there's no queues outside shops anymore, as you'll know yourself, right? They're not limiting, employers aren't limiting the numbers of customers allowed into the store at any given time. They're not ensuring that face coverings are worn. You only have to, and I'm sure your listeners will agree, that the numbers of people going into shops now without face coverings, and it's something that we were actually on the airwaves and released statements over Christmas in, with regard to the abuse that retail workers are receiving when they do approach people and ask them to socially distance, or when they do ask them to wear a face covering.
Keith, by and large, what are union members saying in terms of if they themselves are a close contact of a positive case and it comes to their pay? Is it covered by their sick pay? I know obviously a lot of people are within the union are working for different employers.
They are working for different employers, and if somebody is a close contact of somebody who's a confirmed PCR close contact, then they are entitled to apply for the enhanced illness benefits through the social welfare. But unfortunately, if somebody, it's our understanding, if somebody is a close contact of somebody who tests positive on an antigen test and they do decide to self-isolate, then they're not covered, because they haven't received the text message from the HSE telling them that they're a close contact.
Okay.
And we all know it takes now, you know, depending on the area and depending on the time, it can take anything from 2 to 4 days to get a PCR test. Mm-hmm. And then by the time the result comes back, you know,
if you're potentially negative, and if you're potentially negative, obviously that means there are a lot of lost work days. And if down the line, if you're negative from all close contacts that you may have been in contact to, and one day you do test positive, maybe you've used some of those sick days, etc., that your employer may have originally given you if you were to one day become infected with the virus. It is all very confusing, and it is all mixed messaging for everyone, it seems. But obviously retail workers in particular, like the supermarket employees who really kept the food on the shelves over the initial lockdowns, which were some of the scariest periods for many people in this country, because they really had no idea what was going on. Keith Pollard of the Mandate Trade Union Divisional Organiser, thank you for joining me this afternoon. Stay safe yourself, Keith, and take care. And just in regards to Omicron in particular, as we know, it's more transmissible. It seems to be popping up everywhere. Omicron could infect more than half the population of Europe in the coming weeks, about 6 to 8 weeks. That's according to the World Health Organization. Over 7 million newly reported cases of the virus were reported in the first week of 2022. Now, we have had some texts in regards to wishing a happy birthday to Breda Durney. It's a very happy birthday to you today. That comes in from your brother Mick and your sisters June and May. Are they named June and May after the months they were born? I'm always very interested in that. And thank you for getting in touch with us this afternoon. And elsewhere, just in regards to the county and what is happening at the moment, people may have heard about the store American Eagle in Whitewater Shopping Centre. It's been ordered to stop trading in Ireland. So the High Court has ordered the wind-up of the Irish-based European franchise holder. It's for the well-known US clothing brand. So it has operated two stores here in Ireland, one in Jervis Shopping Centre in Dublin, and then the one in Whitewater Shopping Centre in Newbridge with approximately 24 employees. So the franchise holders are AEOEU Limited. So they've got several subsidiaries in Europe, including its Irish subsidiary, which is AEO Retail Ireland Unlimited. And they said their insolvency arose after the brand's US owner terminated a licence agreement with the effect of preventing the Irish-based entities from selling any American Eagle products. The court heard that agreed targets contained in a 2019 license agreement allowing the Ireland-based entity sell American Eagle Outfitters goods in Europe has not been reached. That agreement required the license holder to have a certain number of stores opened in Europe within the first 3 years, and those obligations were not reached due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the companies have claimed. That's interesting. If it's due to the pandemic, I wonder what will happen, because as we know, American Eagle has only opened very recently in Whitewater Shopping Centre, Newbridge. And if you or any of your loved ones are affected by that, please do get in touch with us. 0833 97 97 97. But something else a lot of people may be affected by in the next few months is the Leaving Cert, of course, and applying for college, the CAO, the good friend of the CAO to many 18-year-olds at the moment. It's good afternoon to the Managing Editor of Education Matters, who is Brian Mooney. Hi, Brian.
How you doing, Ciara?
I'm good, good. How are you doing?
I'm good. So I'm speaking to you today as the Irish Times education columnist, obviously.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Brian. We appreciate you coming in for the Irish Times columnist this afternoon. So we're looking for a step-by-step guide to applying for a college place in 2022. And your column is probably the place to go today.
Well, hopefully, yes. We have a supplement in the paper, and obviously it's advising both parents and students about the process and how they go about it. I know they're all very stressed at the moment, hearing about whether, particularly the Leaving Cert students, whether it's going to be the straight exam or assessed grade, that all this sort of thing. But ultimately, at the end of the day, whatever way it turns out, the best thing they can do is focus on their studies, focus on what they're doing in school, and focus on preparing for the exams, and whatever happens will happen. But ultimately, the only thing they can control is their own work and their own study right now.
Yeah, now, and just in regards to different papers at the moment speaking about the Leaving Cert, we have heard from the Irish Second Level Students Union. They're saying that their quote from the union is that the Leaving Cert cannot go ahead as planned this year. But your advice, Brian, as a student, try not to get too stressed about the situation.
Easier said than done,
in fairness now, Brian.
Because effectively, you know, you can end up spending a lot of mental energy. Will it happen? Won't it happen? Etc. Whatever will happen. But at the end of the day, it's your level of preparedness will determine how well you do. So I know it's going to be very distressing and very distracting, but, you know, you may make your views known. I mean, most Leaving Cert students are 18, so they can let their local TD know, or they can, you know, do a survey with the student representative body. But at the end of the day, the thing you can control more than anything else is your own level of preparedness, and that's what you should focus on.
Now, if we're looking through some of the course point requirements for 2022, what areas in particular do you see rising in terms of the point numbers this year?
Well, Ciara, if you look back to, say, 2019, if you take that as the base year, the last year there was a normal Leaving Cert, the points at higher level went up by 10% in 2020. With calculated grades, and they went up another 7% last year. So points literally were at a hugely, if you use 2019 as the base, inflated level last year, which is the reason that both the teacher unions and the Department of Education don't want to go there again. But then again, there will be 10,000 students in and around from last year still seeking places this year, and they will have high points. And that's unfair in a sense, because that will push up points for this year, even if you went back with this year's leaving cert in terms of their marking.
So what
you're going to have
there,
a lot of
Brian?
Students with high points, which is unfair on this year's students, if you know what I'm saying.
So what does happen there? Like, what would happen if that's potentially the case? What does that mean? Is it just kind of, you know, tough luck? It was just the year that was in it kind of a thing that students are going to hear?
Well, do you see, that's in a sense, what the department and what they have said to them is, well, we're going to give you more choice on papers as we did last year, but we're not going for assessed grade because assessed grades, as you saw last year, led to much higher points. And obviously, you know, we want to get back to where we were before COVID. But of course, that hammers this year's students. But if you then go and say, OK, well, we'll give assessed grades this year again, now you've got 3 years students with high points. And what does that say to the students for 2023? Do you see what I'm saying? So in a sense, it's a catch 22. And it's the dilemma that are facing an awful lot of students and parents who have been anxious and worried about this since September because they can see what's coming. So obviously, you know, now that with the Omicron and a lot of students missing class again, and remember, they're not being taught online. So if you're not in school, you're not being taught. And those who are in school, there are a number of teachers absent as well. And they're not. So the students who are in school aren't getting taught, and they're getting more anxious if they're in the Leaving Cert year. So that's where this pressure is coming from. For, you know, we need some consideration for students. And obviously, I think we do, to be truthful.
And Brian, if we're just to move slightly away from that, because there's obviously, it's a very complex topic and it's going to be, I'd say, tricky over the next few months. What exactly
is why
going...
I'm saying to you, Ciara, students should basically park it and get on with their own
exactly.
work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, exactly. But
you
just
could,
in
you could spend a lot of energy getting upset about this and stressing about it. And at the end of the day, it doesn't add one single point to your point score.
Totally, Brian. Exactly. So what sectors would you advise people out there to look into a bit more, would say, this year for the next, you know, maybe 5 years that might be in demand in terms of jobs, etc. Because, you know, I guess they could take their focus from the potential what's going to unfold in terms of the Leaving Cert and put more focus into that.
My focus as a guidance counsellor, Ciara, and my advice has always been, you know, you find something you love, find something you'll be passionate about, because all careers will go through cycles of really good times, really bad times, over a 30, 40, 50 year career cycle. You know, ultimately, most of us are now going to be working, you know, way into, you know, our 70s or even later, because we're going to be healthier and we're going to need to work. And therefore, we will have a long career. And, you know, rather than looking at where the jobs might be in 4 or 5 years' time, I would start with what are your interests? What are your passions? What are the things that will get you out of bed for the next 4 years that will actually get you to go to lectures, will actually engage with you? It's not like school. You're not going to be supported like you are in school. And you really do have to have a love of the subject area and a real interest in it to survive the lectures, the tutorials, the hours in the library, the project work, etc. So I would say find the area and then look at where the opportunities may arise. Will you get the points for doing it directly? If you are, apply for it. If you're not, maybe looking at doing a further education course, PLC course, which has reserved places. So somebody might, with looking at a course, say, for instance, with 500 plus points, might decide to do a PLC in that area and then get in at their existing level, 350, 400 points, plus a PLC in that particular area. Science, law, business, whatever it is, there are entry routes to the PLC. Or, as many students are now doing, maybe look outside Ireland. Maybe look at the courses taught to English in the Dutch universities or other European universities where they don't look for points. They just look for, do you have the minimum entry requirements? So we have, you know, up to 1,000 students going to the Netherlands each year doing psychology, physiotherapy, all of these high point courses that, you know, they decided, look, I'm never going to get the points here, and they go. So find out where find out what your love is, find out what your passion is, and then find out what is the route that you can use to get to that particular career.
Brilliant. Brian Mooney, thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully we will be speaking to you again in the coming months as we see how the whole situation unfolds in regards
Absolutely,
to the CAO
Ciara.
And the Leaving Cert. Take care, Brian.
And good luck to all the students who are facing the exams this year.
Thanks, Brian.
God bless you.
Okay, so Unite ADI, it's a union which represents driving instructors. Instructors have said there is a lack of facilities at test centres for instructors and their customers. So the backlog is down to 10 weeks after peaking at 8 months at the start of the pandemic. When I was 18, if I had to, or 17, if I had to wait that long, 8 months until I could drive, I'd be so annoyed. I suppose when I was 18, like, which was, what, 10 years ago now, we were able to actually go places, unlike now. But in regards to driving and that at one time 8 month wait for a driving test, Naas Roads Policing Unit earlier were on patrol on the N7 and they saw a driver doing their makeup while in heavy traffic. They stopped the driver and issued a fixed charged penalty notice. Now, this is on Twitter that I saw this, and you know, people have lots of opinions. One person is saying that he was on the M50, he pulled alongside a car. They were steering the wheel with their knees, bottle in one hand, as in water bottle, brush in the other, leaning into a vanity mirror. And then somebody else is saying that they noted someone last week, they're saying here on the M7, and the person had cut them off. And by the time the person had decided to go while the light was green and had sped off at the last second, they left the driver on red. I want to know what everybody else thinks about this in regards to people putting on makeup in cars, getting issued a fixed charge penalty notice, because obviously it's still very dangerous to do something like that. But would something like mobile phones, is that being caught enough? I mean, how many people each day see people on mobile phones that, you know, it's not highlighted as much as a situation like makeup? Caoimhe Harney, what do you think about hearing about this a little earlier? We were talking about it.
Yeah, Ciara, like, I'm not going to lie, I've definitely threw on a bit of mascara in traffic.
Okay, Caoimhe, do not say that, because we do not want the guards coming to knock down our doors
right now. No, but I think, if you look at, you know, you see people smoking in the car, they don't have the use of one hand, they have the hand out the window. So really, they if they're going to find people for putting on makeup, they're going to have to find people for smoking, for drinking a can of Coke, you know, eating a burger, whatever.
Yeah, because lots of people, like, especially in the morning, you may bring like your drink with you, would say coffee, or you may bring like some of your breakfast with you and stuff. So technically, really, like it's not just because like we're women and do sometimes wear makeup, but not even aside from that, technically, really, when it comes to eating and everything, the guards need to crack down on that as well, because your focus is taken. So it's literally when you're in the car, the only thing you can be doing, which is obviously great advice, is to keep your eyes on the road and keep driving, etc., etc. So does that mean that it will eventually turn into people literally being pulled over because they're, what, as you say, taking a drag of a cigarette or eating a hot dog or something?
They're
going to
keep their hands at the learner's position 10 to 2, isn't that it?
Is that still what they advise?
I think so. I don't know. I haven't done my test now in a while.
Did you pass your test first time?
I did, indeed. I actually sat my test on the Friday of the Punchestown Festival, Ladies' Day.
Ooh.
2 o'clock, and the town was jammed.
And Naas is a difficult place to pass the test.
Yeah,
good woman yourself. See, that's why you can do the mascara sometimes. We'll let you away with that one, Caoimhe Harney. Joining me on the line is Louise Birchall. She's the Vice President of Education with Naas Toastmasters. How are you, Louise?
Hi, good. Thank you, Ciara. Lovely to chat with you again.
It's lovely to speak with you too. Louise, tell us, you guys at Naas Toastmasters are holding your first meeting since before Christmas, but it's going to be online tomorrow night.
Yes, unfortunately, we've been online now since the first lockdown back in 2020. We did hope to be back in person at this stage, but we'll have to keep an eye on that for another little while. But actually, surprisingly, Ciara, online is working incredibly well. I was a little bit dubious about it when we started, but it is working very well.
So the whole pandemic, have you been just solely online?
Yes.
Okay. So you're probably itching a little bit to get back in front of people, because at times, Louise, that is what, you know, things like Toastmasters help people with, is gaining their confidence, obviously speaking physically in front of people also. So in regards to that, has that been a tricky time for people who are trying to like increase their confidence when it does come to public speaking?
Oh, I think we're still achieving that with the online meetings, because our members are still preparing their own meetings. They're still presenting the meetings. So all of that element is still there. You can still see the faces of the other members on the screen as you're presenting your speech. So all of that is still there. But of course, in this world that we live in now, and especially with the pandemic, more and more things have moved online. So we're actually developing that skill of how to actually do these things online, which weren't that useful before, but will be in the future.
Louise, just recap exactly what exactly Toastmasters is and does for people.
Sure, absolutely. In Toastmasters, we meet twice a month. We take a little summer break, but we generally meet twice a month, the second and fourth Wednesday of every month. And the structure of the meeting is every week we have a Toastmaster, which is like a host. A different member fulfills that every week. The meeting starts off with three prepared speeches, which generally are 5 to 7 minutes in length. And then each speaker gets an evaluation, which is about 2 to 3 minutes in length. So each of our members will get a chance to speak, and will also get a chance to be an evaluator, which is really, really useful as well, because Toastmasters is not just about the public speaking. While it is a huge part of it, being an evaluator, you have those listening skills. You're listening to the speech, you're thinking about what worked really well, what improvements could be made. And then obviously for the speaker, by getting an evaluation, you're learning how to actually handle criticism. So you're learning how to give feedback, and you're also learning how to take constructive feedback and how to make it work for you. So,
and Louise,
so many skills.
You yourself, how did you get involved?
Oh, yeah. Actually, my story, Kira, is I did a presentation for an organisation, and we were being given feedback afterwards. And the president of the organisation said to me that he wasn't sure if I was reading my notes or fanning myself with them. My hand was going up and down, up and down. Yeah. So after that, I thought, OK, I have to find a platform where I can practice my public speaking. Now, I still get incredibly nervous. My heart is pounding through my chest, even speaking to you right now.
Oh my God, okay, I'm not even just saying this, you do a very good job of hiding it.
Thank you. That's what Toastmasters does. It gives you that opportunity to stand up and give those speeches. And the more you do it, the less daunting it is. While I am still incredibly nervous, I've learned to manage those nerves.
Yeah.
And I think I actually need those nerves now.
Yeah.
You know, that little bit of...
Don't they say that the same feeling of nervousness is the same... It's a similar feeling of excitement. It's just that how our brain interprets it, the actual feelings
exactly.
themselves.
Yeah.
And Louise, just with people out there who would say have got involved in Toastmasters or yourself, do you feel like a lot of the time it's kind of incidents that have happened so far into one's past, like maybe school going time or whatever, that it's almost solidified in their brains, oh, I can't do this, I'm bad at this? Or is it sometimes just... would say within a couple of months somebody has just one time had so much confidence to speak in front of people and now have done a complete 180 and their confidence has been knocked?
Yeah, I think that's happened to me, because actually in school I had no problem getting up and speaking, so I'm not sure where my nerves came from. So it's different. They may never have had that confidence in the first place. I am in my third year in Toastmasters. So my first year, I joined in 2019, and then I had a couple of speeches in front of people, which was amazing. And then in the March, we went online. So online, having the meetings online meant that I was able to go to loads of Toastmasters clubs, not over all over Ireland, but I was able to go to some in the UK, and some of our members travelled as far as Australia and the US online. So it was actually an amazing experience. And in my first year, I did 16 speeches.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Because it was online, I had that opportunity.
Yeah, practice makes perfect. Yeah.
And at the end of my first year, I did a stand-up comedy gig, which online, but I did, and there's no way I would have done that a year previously.
Oh my God, in fairness now, you have to have some confidence to be able to pull that together. That is very cool. It's very cool to hear that, you know, people like yourself get that from things like Toastmasters. And just in regards to the event that is happening in Naas, how do people get involved? How can they log on and become part of Naas Toastmasters?
Yeah, brilliant. We're open to new members at the moment. We would be delighted to have you. We actually have a mentoring system. So if you're nervous, don't worry. We'll give you a mentor, and the mentor will help you along and help you write your speeches, help you deliver your speeches. We will bring you along that process. So you can get in touch with us through either our Facebook page or our Instagram page, Naas Toastmasters. The email address is VPM, V for Victor, P for Papa, M for Mike, naastoastmasters@gmail.com.
Okay, perfect. And we will pop those details up on kfmradio.com's website within the next half an hour. Louise Birchall, Vice President of Education at Naas Toastmasters and a comedian in her part time. Thank you very much for joining me. And
take care
and stay safe this 2022. Thank you all for listening this afternoon. I will be back on air with Kildare Focus from 2 again. And hopefully we'll speak to you again in the morning. Take care.
Kildare Focus with Kira Noble.